have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
I'm Ann Northrup. And the breaking news as we tape on Wednesday afternoon is the coming resignation of Stephen Breyer from the Supreme Court. We'll give you a few thoughts on that.
Finally, also in the news, the NCAA has pulled back on its commitment to protecting marginalized athletes, including women, LGBTQ people, and people of color.
It's kind of a mess. Lesbian Maura Healey, who is currently the Attorney General of Massachusetts, has announced her candidacy for governor of Massachusetts.
I'm going to show you her pitch. A state-funded adoption agency in Tennessee is now shunning Jews as well as gays.
We told you this was coming, and here it is. Florida is moving to shut down any mention of LGBTQ people or issues in public schools.
Cancel culture. A Pennsylvania borough is the first in the state to repeal an LGBTQ rights ordinance.
And it only took them a few months. It's quite a story.
Elections have consequences.
Oh, my God. A leader of a Christian agency in the state of Washington that works to resettle refugees here has quit because his bosses wouldn't let him hire a gay man.
We mourn the losses of early gay and AIDS activists, Arnie Kantrowitz and Gary Smokes.
I'll tell you a little more about their lives. And we are also mourning and are horrified by the murder of a young married lesbian couple in Mexico.
And the new leftist president of Chile has nominated two, count them, two LGBTQ cabinet members. Stephen Breyer, we've been rooting for him to, you know, wake up and realize that if Republicans take back power, the Democrats aren't going to be able to confirm anybody to replace him. So he is retiring. President Biden has to hold the caucus together, always a challenge. And he has promised the president to appoint a black woman.
Yeah, and there are already names floating who seem just spectacularly qualified and desirable for that seat. But that is the question, is will 50 Democratic senators stick together and vote for whoever the president nominates?
Right.
And we have seen the problem of him getting those 50 to stick together for any of the policy proposals
right.
he has put forward, or some of them. And certainly Mitch McConnell will be looking for procedural ways to delay this or tie it up until...
We were not able to stop the Republicans from doing that with Amy Coney Barrett. That went through in a flash.
Absolutely. But we're not as ruthless as the Republicans. And all they have to do is delay it through the midterm elections, elect enough senators, and they can throw a monkey wrench into it. I'm just saying. This is not a done deal, given the obstreperous nature of the Democratic senators, some of them, and we have to really hold our breath and hope that they can accomplish this.
And maybe we can force out Clarence Thomas for corruption. There's more that we learned this week about right-wing activist Ginny Thomas, his wife, profiled by Jane Mayer in The New Yorker. Ginny believes transsexual fascists are running America. After she flunked the bar exam in 1980, she joined a cult called Lifespring, where members would routinely get together to fat shame each other naked in order to lose weight. Now, she works at the vehemently anti-LGBTQ First Liberty Institute, a Christian right group with several cases before her husband's court. Fordham law professor Bruce Green calls the Thomases a mom-and-pop political hack group where she does the political stuff and he does the judging. You know, we told you last week, Ginny also spoke at a banquet that featured the founder of the Oath Keepers, Stuart Rhodes, who's under indictment for sedition. And she said those Oath Keepers did nothing wrong. This is crazy.
Well, some people might consider this a conflict of interest with your husband on the Supreme Court and with you clearly having an enormous influence on him. But, you know, they're oblivious to those kinds of charges. And I don't know what it would take to come up with enough evidence to get him, impeached, which is what you would do. You would get him off the court by impeaching
him. Oh, yeah, the Republicans would impeach him by two-thirds. All right.
Only if they had the power to replace him with someone even worse, which they don't at the moment.
Let's move on to some better news from the Federal Bureau of Prisons. They revisited its manual for incarcerated transgender people, improving policies for housing and treatment, keeping them safer, and providing access to life-saving health care, including gender-affirming surgery. The Trump administration had instituted harmful and discriminatory changes to that manual. Lambda Legal and the Southern Poverty Law Center sued the Department of Justice, the Bureau of Prisons, and it's now under new management.
Well, what particularly impresses me is that Lambda is happy about these announced changes. Usually we have a lot of reservations about whatever is newly announced. They never go far enough. They're never detailed enough, whatever. But Lambda put out a press release really praising the Bureau for these revised rules. So, terrific.
And by the way, even if, of course, if we replace Breyer with a flaming liberal, the Supreme Court is still far to the right. And man, are they took two cases challenging affirmative action this week, which will be heard in the next term as the court works its way through dismantling civil rights advances since the 1950s. Nothing is safe.
Yeah, all we're trying to do is hold the line against another horrible conservative.
Well, we could have held the line if, in many cases, Ruth Bader Ginsburg had also retired.
Please, the past is the past, Andy.
No, but I'm just saying people have to be more conscious of this. All of them.
That's why I'm suggesting we be conscious of this one and making sure that we follow through. Other good federal government news, or potentially, the Department of Education Office of Civil Rights has announced it's going to investigate something called Clark's Summit College in Pennsylvania because they threw out a gay student just short of his graduation when they discovered he was there. He'd been there for quite a while. They're a Christian school that has an official exemption, religious exemption from the federal government.
Yeah, take it easy on this because everybody's being investigated technically. BYU is being probed by the by federal investigators on whether they can maintain a policy banning same-sex romantic behavior.
But I think there's a difference.
They fully expect to be allowed to keep discriminating.
I think there are differences here, though, between, I don't think they should be allowed to ban any of this stuff, but it's one thing to ban affectional behavior between students of the same sex. It's another thing to throw a student out of your school because of who he is.
Back in the 70s, Oral Roberts University lost their federal funding because they would not allow dating.
Bob Jones.
What?
Wasn't it Bob Jones University?
Oh, maybe. You're right. Sorry. I think.
It's okay. That's why there are two of us here.
One of those.
Well, the point is, in the Trump administration, these Christian colleges had a lot more leeway to get these exemptions to allow them to discriminate across the board. And the Biden administration is trying to pull some of that back.
Okay, let's talk about the NCAA. That's a big national story.
Let's do. So they adopted a new constitution last week, which had been the subject of a lot of speculation and discussion beforehand. And what they've done this strange thing where they have, on the one hand, decentralized and put the onus for protecting various minorities back on the various sport organizations and local colleges and universities. But on the other hand, they have also consolidated some power to themselves. And the thing that people are asking is, how come years ago, when North Carolina passed this law against trans kids using the correct bathrooms, you pulled all your competitions out of North Carolina? But then when other states did it, you didn't follow through. And my answer would be they just threw up their hands and said, well, we're not going to, you know, we'll be down to two states where we can hold competitions. We're not going to do that anymore.
Well, I mean, you know, there's also the story out of South Dakota where Governor Kristi Noem was hesitant about, so she didn't sign the first anti-trans bill. And now that's her whole platform that she's running on. So the Senate there passed one, 26-7.
But I think she knows the NCAA is not going to punish her for that.
Right.
Anymore.
And that's, you know, they're basically making discrimination a local option.
Exactly.
There's a woman named Dorian Rhea Debussy of Kenyon College, who's trans feminine. She was running an NCAA-run diversity program, and she quit over protest. If you're not going to back it up, I don't want to be a part of this.
They have imposed new rules about testosterone levels for trans women in competition. They used to allow more local options on that, but now they have said, no, we're going to have a baseline for where your testosterone levels have to be, and that's a consolidation of power. But at the same time, they are expecting various sports organizations to decide who they're going to discriminate against. And that is an abdication of their responsibility to set some kind of consistent rules. They've cut the HBCU colleges out of power. They're not allowed to have seats on the governing body help make any decisions on any of this. Plus, the Division II and III colleges, they're cut out of this system also. And what else? And they've dropped the non-discrimination language in their constitution.
Cowards.
Cowards and bigots.
All right. Can we go to the states?
Sure.
Let's go to Massachusetts. The state attorney general there is running for governor. And against Charlie Baker. I guess Charlie's running again.
No, he's not. He is not running again. He is he's stepping down, and therefore it's an open seat.
Oh, thank you.
So out lesbian Maura Healey, who is a heroine in Massachusetts, very well liked and very well known, and is certainly a front runner for governor of Massachusetts.
Well, she headed the attorney general's office civil rights division when the challenge to in 2009 against DOMA, where the Supreme Court eventually struck down that part of DOMA in the Windsor case in 2013. She working with Mary Bonotto of Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders. So anyway,
she's brought 100 lawsuits against the Trump administration.
Let's hear from her pitch.
Massachusetts, I know the years of the pandemic have been really hard, but I see a state that's coming together with courage, grit, and caring to do great things. From Worcester to Woburn, New Bedford to North Adams, Massachusetts will come back stronger than ever because we're working together. I grew up one of five kids raised by a single mom, a school nurse. It wasn't always easy, but she taught us the importance of caring for others and for our community. Teamwork got us through. I believe in teamwork. I've seen it on the court and in the court as your attorney general. My team protected students and homeowners from predatory lenders, took on ExxonMobil for lying about climate change, and Purdue Pharma and the Sacklers for fueling the opioid epidemic. I've stood with you as the people's lawyer, and now I'm running to be your governor, to bring us together and come back stronger than ever. We'll continue with what's working and fix what's not. We'll get our economy back on track and bring job training to every part of our state so that everyone can share in our growth. We'll make childcare more affordable so that every family can have the flexibility and support they need. And we'll modernize our schools so that our children can learn in a safe, sustainable environment. We have the best tech in the world. Together, we'll take on climate change. And because too many have waited too long, together we'll bring justice and equality to everyone. I believe in Massachusetts, and I believe in our people. So join us. Let's do this together.
She's obviously an out lesbian, but you don't see her there with her partner, Gabrielle Wolo Hojian, because her partner is an associate justice of the state appeals court, and they're not allowed to do politics.
There are a few subtle clues, like the poster with a rainbow, and then all her basketball playing, yeah. And some muscled arms. But it's not as explicit as some of the other campaign videos we've seen. But she's a very strong candidate, and as I say, very popular. And so we'll follow her race.
And out on Long Island, Tom Suozzi is stepping down from Congress to run for governor in a sort of a centrist campaign. So running for his seat is the out longtime Democratic National Committee member Robert Zimmerman, 67 years old. He's running for that in a crowded field.
Yeah, I don't know that Suozzi's going to get very far in the governor's race.
He thinks he's going to win, according to a friend of ours.
Oh, yeah?
He talks to him all the time. Who doesn't
support him? Oh, and he says he's going to win. All right.
He doesn't support him.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
How often have we seen that before? And we also are following the campaign for U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania of Malcolm Kenyatta,
yes,
out gay Democrat, who has gotten some very impressive endorsements.
Yeah, he's been endorsed. I mean, that's a crowded field, too. You know, Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, Connor Lamb, the congressman. But he's been endorsed by the AFT, AFSCME, the Teamsters, Working Families, the Victory Fund. So, you know, it's a wide open race.
And then the question is, will Georgia senatorial candidate?
For Herschel Senator
Walker?
Against Raphael Warnock, who was the Democrat.
Yes. Will Herschel Walker be damaged by his son, Christian Walker?
Well, his son is a piece of work. His son, Christian, was being interviewed and attacked the label gay. He said, "Don't put that ghetto G word on me. I just like masculine men. I don't want to be lumped in with rainbow people. I'm not a gay conservative. I'm a conservative who likes men." He's a Trump-loving social media influencer.
Oh, my. Well, Herschel has enough problems of his own. I don't know which way this is going to go.
That's a close race. In fact, Warnock was up 2 points the last time.
I kind of have faith in Warnock at this point, but
he's great.
See.
He's terrific.
In his ability to win this race.
Yeah.
But we shall see where that goes. All right. Kyrsten Sinema is still in trouble with Democrats in Arizona. The state Democratic Party has censured her formally for her opposition to
her failure to do whatever it takes to ensure the health of our democracy. And it was a unanimous vote.
Yeah, the problem is, A, we need her vote on a Supreme Court nominee, And B, her alienating Arizona Democrats may only help her win her Senate seat in 2024 with the help of...
I don't think that's true. I think she's going to... Well, we'll see.
Who knows?
Good luck, Arizona. Okay, let's go to Tennessee.
Well, let's get that Supreme Court vote along the way.
Okay. All right. In Tennessee, a state-funded Methodist home for children would not let a Jewish couple adopt a disabled child, and they're suing them. Elizabeth and Gabriel Rutan, what is that, Rom? They said they were, in other words, they wanted to adopt a kid and from Florida, but they live in Tennessee, and they had to be cleared by some agency in Tennessee. And this is the only one in their county. So, the Tennessee passed a law in 2020 allowing this kind of discrimination against people who don't share their faith or values or good grief.
Yeah, so we have been yelling for some years now about these religious adoption agencies that won't work with LGBTQ parents, prospective adoptive or foster parents. And we've been warning people, look, you give them these religious exemptions and it's not going to be just us that they reject. They're going to go much farther in who they reject. And sure enough, now we have the Jewish couple rejected by this.
I mean, they can start rejecting Catholics, you know.
Because they can reject anyone they want.
Right.
And but I like the fact that they're getting a lot of publicity on this in hopes that the enemy of my friend will continue to be my enemy.
The Supreme Court is supposed to have all these concerns for religious freedom. And this case sort of cuts both ways.
Yeah.
All right. In California, in the Spreggles Union School District, a parent is, we talked about this case, but now a parent is suing the two teachers claiming who ran the LGBT Equality Club, convinced that her child, 11, was changing her gender identity because of them, and it concealed it from the parents. So these are the two teachers who spoke at a conference and were recorded by the right wing and are having all kinds of trouble. But now they have more trouble.
Well, that's discouraging. In Spokane, Washington, there is an agency called World Relief, and they're currently working with Afghan refugees who come to the United States and need help being placed here. So there's a guy named Mark Finney, who worked for them for some years. World Relief is an agency run by the National Association of Evangelicals. So Mark Finney was doing a great job with refugees, but he wanted to hire a married gay lawyer. And the World Relief honcho said, oh, no, you cannot, you must rescind that job offer. We're not going to have any gay people working for us. So Mark Finney quit, and he is now going to start his own nonprofit to help refugees.
He said his faith in Jesus required him to do this. We cannot exclude one marginalized group in the name of serving another marginalized group.
Other staff members are also quitting World Relief over this, and they're losing some funding and some donations.
And, of course, the central organization says, well, we'll serve the refugees no matter what they are, but not we can't have staff that way.
Sounds like the Salvation Army.
All right. And horrible news out of Florida, as there always is under Governor DeSantis. A House committee passed a don't say gay bill for schools, advancing it to the full House. It would ban discussions about sexual orientation and gender identity in schools, erasing LGBTQ identity, history, and culture, as well as the students themselves. It includes vague parental notification requirements that could expose a child's sexual orientation to the parent against their will. Chasten Buttigieg, of all people, wrote, this will kill kids, Governor DeSantis. You are making your state a harder place for LGBTQ kids to survive. So they're really going full fascist down there.
Well, it's not just them. Governor Abbott in Texas is running on passing a parental rights bill, which would do exactly the same thing. But I think the most egregious story, other than the fact that those are statewide and horrible, comes from a small town in Mississippi, Ridgeland, Mississippi, where the mayor, Gene McGee, has on his own say-so, without even consulting the governing board of the town, has withheld library funds because he has said to the library, you're not getting any city money, until you get every bit of LGBTQ material out of the library. Now, it is hard.
Holy Bible? He wants to get the Holy Bible out?
There is a queer Bible that is one of the things he wants removed. But this is the most egregious violation of the First Amendment's prohibition against government censorship.
Which is why I urge, both in Florida and in this case, engage in as much civil disobedience as you can tolerate and make the case if you can. I think librarians are very brave people. Teachers are very brave people. They need to stand up to this. I hope that they will stand up to it.
Well, the librarian in Ridgeland, Mississippi is standing up to it and is revealing this and fighting back and not standing for it. But he's got the money. Now, she's going to the governing board in the town. I don't know what their attitude is, but this is so illegal for him to withhold this money from the city-funded library. It's incredible.
For God's sakes. Rudy Giuliani wanted to defund the Brooklyn Museum because he didn't like a painting that he thought insulted the Blessed Virgin Mary.
He didn't get away with it.
No, he did not.
Because it's illegal.
That's the first time I went to the museum, was to protest out there against him. Anyway, well, more bad people. The Chambersburg, Pennsylvania Borough Council. The old council there, last year, 4 months ago, passed an LGBT rights ordinance. The new Trumpian Republican council took over this year. They repealed the ordinance 7-3. Now, 71 of Pennsylvania's municipalities have these ordinances, and the majority of the population, which you have to understand, between Pittsburgh and Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania is mostly Alabama, and it's very conservative, and that's what they're playing off over there.
Well, these people, the ones who took over, they got together to run and ran on a campaign specifically to repeal this ordinance. When the ordinance was adopted, they said, oh, no, we're not going to stand for this. And they all decided to run for office. They took over and they repealed it.
Well, people voted for bigotry, but at the hearing, there were 60 testifiers, all but five or six testified, don't do this. They kept calling it special rights, which they only want, of course, for white heterosexual Christians. So I hope good people there can turn the tide, as exhausting as it is.
This also forbids or repeals the mandate for a human relations commission. And they also, they said, don't worry, if you have a problem, you can turn to the state. Of course, there is no statewide non-discrimination law.
But there is the Bostock decision federally. If you are discriminated against in employment, you have some recourse. And we're going to talk about how that's helped some people.
Okay.
All right. And let's talk about who it helped in Tennessee. At Vanderbilt University, a 25-year trans employee, Olivia Ruth Hill, settled her lawsuit over 18 months of harassment and discrimination to which she was subjected from 2018 to 19. She was placed on administrative leave in 2019, but none of the men who harassed her were. When the plant manager retired in 2021, she applied and was told, you're not going to get it. And she was forced to be interviewed by some of the men who harassed her. And she's a combat vet of the Navy with disabilities. She had held every position at the power plant there. That was her job. She wrote their manual for procedures. The Vanderbilt chancellor gave her the Heart and Soul Award in 2019. So she settled the lawsuit with her lawyer, Tennessee attorney Abby Rubenfeld, who used to run Lambda and assisted by NCLR. And she sued under Bostock, under the Civil Rights Act of 64, Title IX of the Education Act, and the ADA. And she sued under the Tennessee Human Rights Act because it covers sex.
She transitioned in her 50s, and she has recorded a video which tells her story, which is really moving and important. So we thought you might like to see it.
My name is Olivia Hill. I'm also a patient of VUMC through Dr. Winokur. And then I also volunteer with the TransBuddy program at the medical center as well. And I guess my journey really technically started in 1970 when I was about 5 years old. That's the first time that I realized that I was the same as my mother. I felt the same as any other girl in my family or any other person in my friends and everything. So in 1975, in fifth grade, in Miss Harris's class, we were going to have a variety show, and I wanted to be Minnie Pearl. And so I went, signed up, I went home, and Mom made me a little hat and put little flowers all around it, and she wouldn't let me wear a dress, but I used to wear dresses and makeup and everything at home. I went with some bib overalls, and I thought I could pull this off anyway, because when I walk out on stage and you say howdy, and the whole state, everybody says it back, and you tell a few jokes, and everybody laughs, and it's fun. I was standing on the side of the stage, and this dark blue velvet curtain came up, and they called my name, and I walked out, and I looked for my mom, and she was sitting right there in the middle like some proud mom, and I said, howdy, and not a soul said a word. I was completely embarrassed and started to cry, and then I forgot all my words of everything I was going to say, so I ran off stage, and that night, Mom and I had a long talk, and so she sent me to a psychiatrist here in Green Hills. And for the next 2 years, he spent to try to teach me how to be a boy and wanted to be a boy and to not want to enjoy cooking and cleaning and going shopping and girl things. And that I should want to work in the yard and like trucks and stuff like that. And so that's when I started to learn to pretend. I really learned that lesson in the military as soon as I joined in boot camp. I had all 92 men hit me at least once, sometimes two or three. I broke my nose and busted my jaw, and I was sore from head to toe. But I had to continue on at boot camp and act like everything was just fine. So I knew at that moment that I had to hide the real me. And so
that's when I developed this voice and tried to be manly and cool and super awesome.
In 2015, my mother passed away, February the 12th. And that's when I tell people my egg cracked. And that's when everything just started to come out. And I knew that I couldn't hide me any longer. I started seeing a therapist. And it took me about 2 years before I finally got the courage up to start estrogen. So Thanksgiving weekend, 2017, I started taking estrogen. September the 9th, 2018, I legally changed my name to Olivia Ruth Hill. I liked the name of Olivia. I thought it was a good, strong name. And Ruth is my grandmother's middle name, which is the greatest woman I think ever walked the face of this earth. And Hill is my mother's maiden name. My dad left when I was a year and a half, so I didn't feel like the need to honor his name any further. So it was a way for me to honor the two strong, amazing women in my life. I wanted to have surgery, but at the time, Vanderbilt did not offer it. So I talked to my endocrinologist, Dr. Utz, who gave me a referral of four or five different ones. I settled on Dr. Keeley McPhee at Duke University in Raleigh, North Carolina. And I have what I call my corrective surgery. I had gender reassignment surgery and breast augmentation. And I stayed in the hospital until Friday. And then because of everything, I had to stay in the area for another 10 days. So I had to rent a hotel room to stay in the area. And that's when where a lot of trans people go through after their surgery is a very dark place. And I was as scared as I have ever been in my entire life. I was there alone. I was now finally me. I didn't have to hold anything else back. I came back home and tried to get everything set up to have facial feminization surgery. And I called three different plastic surgeons places, and the first one hung up on me. The second one said that we don't deal with transgender people. And the third one gave me a phone number that I called and no one ever answered. So I don't know what kind of thing it was. I was at my computer at work. And for some reason, I saw an ad that came across my computer screen for Vanderbilt Plastic Surgery. And I thought, what the heck? I'll give them a call. Everybody else has turned me down. And I think I kind of had a little bit of an attitude when I called. And I was like, my name's Olivia. I'm transgender. I need facial feminization surgery. Will you deal with me? And the sweet lady, Jenny, said, well, absolutely. I'm going to pair you up with Dr. Winokur, which I think is a good fit for you. And turned out to be an amazing, amazing physician who did, I think, a great job on my face. May the 20th of 2019, I had my facial feminization surgery. That's been part of the cost of all of this, is I've lost everything. I've lost my entire family. I've lost both of my adult children, everybody in my family, all my friends, people I've been friends with since high school have all walked away from me since I've completely come out. I've found out that I now have a granddaughter that I'm not allowed to see. I remember my first meeting with Dr. Utz, and I remember she walked in and shook my hand and welcomed me, and then she said there was going to be some blood work. I remember nothing else in between. I was so scared. I remember I cried a couple times, and that was about it. And so if I can be there with somebody and listen to what the doctor says, and then after that part is all over with, kind of meet with them and tell them, well, this is what she said, and this is what they're going to do, and this is how things are going to be, and even write things down for them if they need to be helpful. I signed up for the TransBuddy program, and so I volunteer on the TransBuddy program. I'm actually on several different ones. I'm on a TransBuddy program. I'm with the, I was just selected to be on a Nashville LGBT Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors. I'm a women's committee at Vanderbilt University. I'm also USAC, University Staff Advisory Council, with a subcommittee of equity, diversity, inclusion. And I'm also on the Pride Council for the Board of Pride for Nashville. And so I put myself into helping everybody else, because most all transgenders go through this as well. And if there's anything I can do to help somebody else, then that's where the real joy is at. I think it's amazing. I think it basically turns Vanderbilt Medical Center into a one-stop shop for everybody transgender, because they can get top, bottom surgery, facial feminization surgery, everything. You have the TransBuddy program. They have the amazing trans clinic out in Bellevue now. So, I mean, there's all the needs of a trans person are met with Vanderbilt Medical Center.
I made this video to promote the Vanderbilt Medical Center, but that was before she had to file lawsuits against Vanderbilt for the discrimination.
Well, I mean, the people in her department were just awful. The things they said were vile to her. And
but that was at the power plant,
yes,
not at the medical center.
The university has, so they've settled the suit. And congratulations on settling the suit and on your courage in speaking out the way you did so beautifully, telling your story. It takes a lot of guts.
Terrific person. Now, last year in California, the state created a transgender and nonconforming wellness and equity fund for $13 million. And trans leaders and politicians in New York have now asked Governor Kathy Hochul here for the same thing. No word yet on her opinion on that, but we'll let you know what she has to say.
Okay. In West Virginia, a lesbian tech sergeant, Kristen Kingry, of the Air National Guard there, is suing the Army and the Air Force because her boss penalized her for not being feminine enough. She's been in the military for 14 years. She was told to let her hair grow out and wear makeup or there'd be consequences. And she got denied a job. She was harassed by the vice wing commander, Michael Cadle. Her lawyer is using the Bostock decision, and she says, I have not considered quitting. I will not be defeated.
And she carries around the regulations to try to prove to anyone who challenges her that she is allowed to present herself like this. And why not in the military in particular?
Crazy.
All right. And in also in Pennsylvania, John Daw, the former executive director of Equality Pennsylvania, has been sentenced to 1 to 2 years in prison and probation and listing on the sex registry. for child porn possession and sexually molesting minors.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about a couple of the good people that we lost this past week. The first is Arnie Kantrowitz, who was a true gay pioneer, an author and a professor. Put his picture up there. Look at this quote from Arnie, because he started in 1970. "When I see young men and old women come out of the closet and face being called faggots and dykes and pariahs and betrayers of the family dream, then I am honored to be gay, because I belong to a people who are proud." So he was one of the really early members of the Gay Activists Alliance in 70. There he is at a demonstration at City Hall in 71, about to be trampled by a police officer on horseback. And Arnie had a lot of guts because he was a college professor on Staten Island. And, you know, he was out and, you know, there he is at a demonstration against the New York Times and other for using services that expose people who were gay so you didn't have to employ them, a group called Fidelifax. But being out as a professor on Staten Island, he used to keep a collection of rocks on his desk that were thrown at his window there. But he was a beloved professor there. There's a tape that I'm going to, and that's his memoir in 1977, Under the Rainbow, Growing Up Gay, which was a real seminal memoir of that type. He was on the Jack Parr show with a bunch of activists, and Jack Parr was being a bigot, and he stood up to him and conveyed the message. Brandon Judell, who's a film critic, says, "Arnie certainly seemed to always be in good humor, which was unusual for a gay activist, but not possibly for a biographer of Walt Whitman. Maybe those two vocations balanced each other out." And, you know,
he was a co-founder of the Gay Activists Alliance. I'm sorry, not of.
Of GLAAD, yes.
Yes.
With Vito Russo, his best friend. And,
right.
And of course, his life partner for almost 40 years, Larry Mass, who we had on the show, who was the first guy to write about AIDS and a big AIDS activist and a co-founder of JMHC. So those three greats together. But I mean, with Vito, yes, co-founded GLAAD when it was a grassroots activist group.
And I just rewatched The Celluloid Closet, the movie, the documentary based on Vito's book, and Arnie is prominently thanked in the credits for contributing to that.
Every time I saw him at a screening, he would say, "I cry every time." Larry Mass said Arnie realized that there was something more important than truth, kindness. Arnie was a true golden soul. Okay, and then another guy we lost was a guy named Gary Spokes. We have a picture of him when he was quite young. He was born, and he's 83 years old when he died. He was active with Dignity, the gay Catholic group, for 40 years in New York, and he served on their AIDS ministry in the 80s, and he worked in the hospitality industry and taught management at Pace University. And there he is in older times. But I will remember him. He was the AIDS columnist for a gay paper that I wrote for in the early 80s called the New York City News. Basically, the only AIDS columnist in the country besides Larry Mass, who we just spoke about. So a real trailblazer.
We're getting short on time, so we're going to have to whip through the rest of the show.
Put up a picture of the French designer Thierry Mugler, a French designer, very outrageous and gender busting. He died at the age of 73. He even used Ivana Trump as a model. Oh my God! And Jerry Arias and Gay Grace Jones. He loved latex, leather, and curves.
And I want to mention the Vanity Fair article on Jerry Falwell Jr. Not much new there on his pool.
Takes no responsibility for his downfall. It's Franklin Graham's fault. He was jealous of me.
Well, that they have a big feud, evidently. That I found interesting. And, of course, his non-religiosity. But what interested me even more is his father, Jerry Falwell Sr., he describes as also not religious. And that his bigotry was simply a political ploy to advance his own career. And that he
had most bigots.
No interest in religion, Jerry Falwell.
Give me a sincere bigot anytime. most of
Vanity
them.
Fair. Look it up. All right, let's move on to international news.
Well, okay. The horrible story out of Mexico, two married lesbians were found murdered. Noemi Medina Martinez and Tanya Montes Hernandez, both 28 years old, tortured and dismembered in the Chihuahua state and the border city of Ciudad Juarez. The police are calling it an economic crime, not a hate crime. Well, the couple and their three kids together, they were married in July. They lived in Juarez. They traveled to the United States a lot in El Paso, where they have relatives. The local LGBT...
I think they lived in El Paso when they were traveling to...
That was the early report. They lived in Mexico and they traveled to see relatives in El Paso. But the local LGBT group says it was clearly a hate crime, and they're concerned the local authorities will not do a thorough investigation. 92% of homicides in Mexico go unsolved.
All right. In Chile, good news, where the new president has nominated a lesbian and a gay man as members of his cabinet. The lesbian will be the sports minister. The gay man will be the education minister.
Okay. In Canada, 4,000 Christian pastors, in the United States, preached against Canada's new law banning conversion therapy. It was dubbed Biblical Sexuality Sermon Sunday by Liberty Coalition Canada, and they were at Liberty. No one was arrested for preaching their hatred.
Well, in France, the National Assembly has unanimously passed a ban on conversion therapy. The Senate had already passed it. So President Macron will sign it, and then it will go into effect in 14 days. Fines and prison if you violate it, and it applies to both adults and youth conversion attempts.
President Macron said, being oneself is not a crime. In Germany, a group of 122 Catholic Church employees, including priests, former priests, and teachers, identify themselves as LGBTQ to challenge the outdated statements of church doctrine, and they want better treatment, not better treatment, they want fair treatment for people who work in the church. They've got the support of two bishops there to some extent, so great.
Honduras has been listening to Governor DeSantis and Governor Abbott. Members of Congress are proposing a ban on information to youth on gender identity issues.
In Namibia, the Windhoek High Court ruled against recognizing foreign same-sex marriages. The judge said he was bound by a 20-year precedent that does not recognize same-sex relationships and says the Superior Court would have to change that.
Jasmine Canick, the black lesbian journalist in L.A. who revealed the Ed Buck murders, has a new podcast called Ring the Alarm about murders in Jamaica of LGBTQ people. She's doing that in conjunction with The Advocate. Look for that.
In India, a film that was set in the military with a gay soldier in it was rejected by the defense ministry, who get final say over anything to do with the military in the movies.
Oh, boy. All right, moving on.
In Uzbekistan, they sentenced a blogger who defended gay rights to 3 years restricted freedom for slandering the government. All he did is expose their bigotry. The Pope made more unsolicited comments about gay people you don't want to talk about it. Happy birthday to UK activist Peter Tatchell, who turned 70 on Tuesday, and US activist Shep Wannan, who turned 70 on Saturday.
In AIDS news, Gilead Corporation says it has found and stopped some counterfeit drugs, including Biktarvy and Descovy. People putting fake pills in authentic bottles. There are 22 defendants who are going to be charged in this case. Meanwhile, Mark Cuban, Texas millionaire, billionaire,
Shark Tank,
starting his own direct order generic drug pharmacy called CostPlusDrugs.com. He's got about 100 drugs on the list at the moment, but he's going to expand that to HIV drugs and STI drugs.
One of them is an HIV drug. Elton John, we're not going to tell you about everybody who gets COVID since everybody seems to be getting it, but he got it. He's triple vaccinated, but he had to cancel his farewell Yellow Brick Road tour dates in Dallas for two times. He's 74 years old. He said, "This is it for me, though, this series, and then I'm going to go spend more time with my kids and my husband."
Good. Adam Rippon is revealed that he's married his boyfriend of several years, Jussi Pekka Kajala.
They did it on New Year's Eve in Los Angeles City Hall, just with the dog.
Encino City Hall.
All right, with the dog as the witness. Despite the Pope's admonitions, they do not plan to have children. They met in 2018 and got engaged in 2020. Kajala is from Finland.
Lily Tomlin is getting the AARP Movies for Grownups Career Achievement Award. This ceremony will be shown on PBS Great Performances in March.
The gay NASCAR driver, Zach Herron, just raced at Daytona in practice rounds for the first time since coming out. He's been racing for 10 years, but this is the first time he's his true self. He stressed that he was very stressed about it, but he did his third lap and he said, "I got into the groove," and he's getting a lot of support. And that's great to hear about NASCAR.
And at the Australian Tennis Open, they held their first Pride Day. Here is Liam Brody from Britain. He lost in the first round, but he wore rainbow shoelaces in honor of LGBT people, saying, "They've supported me, I'm supporting them." But how could anyone see those shoelaces with those shorts?
But he noted the absence of out male players in pro tennis.
I can't get over those shorts. I like those shorts, but come on.
Right. Why don't you talk about the Young and the Restless?
Well, the Young and the Restless. Well, the young couple, Tessa and Mariah, who we have been following for several years, have just gotten engaged on the show. This is great news. They have a lot of chemistry. They're not the Cameron Grimes on the right there in the red dress who plays Mariah is bisexual in real life. The woman who plays Tessa is not. But it's a soap opera, so they're only going to be allowed to be happy for about 3 weeks, and something is going to happen. Tessa's ex-boyfriend is hanging around and moping and concerned, so I am worried about him.
Annette Bening is grabbing another big lesbian role. She will play marathon swimmer Diane Nyad in a biopic, co-starring Jodie Foster playing Bonnie Stahl, who was her coach. It is a Netflix deal.
Lady Gaga and Salma Hayek have revealed that they improvised a sex scene for the House of Gucci movie, but it ended up on the cutting room floor. Why is my question.
So the Gilded Age was getting pretty gnarly reviews.
I watched it. Did you watch it?
I did too. I don't think it's terrible, but
no, me either.
It's set in 1882 when my grandmother was 2 years old in New York, not so long ago. It's a conflict between old New York and new New York with the robber barons. Cynthia Nixon and Michael Cerberus are among the gays in the cast. Lots of echoes of Downton Abbey. This is sort of Uptown Abbey.
There's a gay surprise at the end.
There is a gay surprise at the end of the first episode.
Congratulations to our friend.
Not by a gay actor.
Huh?
Not by a gay actor.
Congratulations to our friend Ivy Kwan Arcee and her artist collaborator Julie Tolentino, who have been placed in the Whitney Biennial art exhibit. That's a big deal.
It's on April 6th and goes through October 23rd at the Whitney.
Also, Jonathan Berger, another ACT UP alumni. It's ACT UP Alumni Day at the Whitney Biennial.
All right. In the Winter Olympics, we're going to have a bunch of out gay athletes, but out gay Gus Kenworthy will play for Team Britain, where he was born. He played for the United States in 2014 and 2018 in the men's free ski half pipe. He grew up in Colorado after being born there. His secret boyfriend of 2 years was revealed. Put the picture back up. Adam Umhafer, who was a foundation executive at the Creative Arts Agency. The Olympics begin February 4th from China. Adam has served as an executive director of the American Foundation for Equal Rights.
And from the world of pro wrestling, AC Mack has won a championship for the IWTV independent wrestling world. He is the first out gay wrestler to win a professional championship. And there he is kissing his boyfriend on the right after he won. I'm not familiar with this branch of wrestling, but everybody's quite excited.
He was told he wouldn't make it because he was black and gay, and he did kiss his boyfriend in the ring. I don't know if he's in the ring, but
we have a correction from last week when we were taping Wednesday afternoon. We did not yet know that the gay couple we were celebrating on The Amazing Race had not come back to the show after their COVID interruption. So they are not on the show. Nothing happened to them. They just didn't come back.
What else you got? I skipped over some stories. I'll do them if
First, Amy Schneider is still on Jeopardy, has now, as of our Wednesday afternoon taping, won 40 shows, making her the second longest stretch of shows winner, second only to Ken Jennings, who's way out in front with 74 wins. She's won, at this point, as you see there, $1,382,000. She also showed up this week on Andy Cohen's Watch What Happens Live. He had on a couple of the Real Housewives of Miami and brought Amy on to run a quiz for them. So Amy, at a remote location, was asking questions of the housewives. It was very amusing.
Okay.
Also, HBO Max has announced that their upcoming Batgirl movie is going to include an out trans actress, Ivory Aquino, playing Batgirl's roommate and best friend. And there's a lot of controversy over Saturday Night Live's Weekend Update segment last weekend. A lot of cheap gay jokes. It was bad.
We do have less than a minute. I'll go back to the story in the United Kingdom. A British Christian couple were selling their home, and they would not let gay buyers even look at it. They said that that they quote Bible verses to them, said that they were depraved, and told them that homosexuality is contrary to the gracious teaching in God's word. So these guys who were rejected, are told the listing agency, and the listing agency said, we're cutting that couple off. They can't list their home with us.
Another triumph. All right, that's for us this week. We will be back next week. Subscribe to our email at gayusatv.org, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for being with us.